Hi, everyone. It's Jen DeWall. And on this week's episode of the Leadership Habit Podcast, I sat down with Dr. Caprice Hollins to talk about how to have difficult conversations on race. These are conversations that as leaders, we want to be able to lean into. They impact the quality of a work experience, life experience someone has. They impact our hiring decisions. They impact how well our team can communicate and collaborate. And sometimes these conversations can often be the ones that are avoided, the ones that aren't had, even though they are so essential to how we work. I am so excited to share this episode with you. But before we dive in, let me tell you a little bit more about Dr. Caprice Hollins. Dr. Caprice Hollins was born and raised in Seattle, Washington. She received a doctorate in clinical psychology with an emphasis in multicultural and community psychology from California School of Professional Psychology. Dr. Hollins has over 25 years of experience facilitating race-related workshops. She co-founded Cultures Connecting in 2008, and her second book, Inside Out, The Equity Leader's Guide to Undoing Institutional Racism, was recently published. She's a Seattle 2020 TEDx speaker on what white people can do to move race conversations forward. I would highly recommend listening to it. I listened to it a few times just to really allow what she was saying to sink in and think about it. I mean, bottom line is Dr. Hollins has got a tremendous amount of experience in work and facilitating these difficult conversations. And in the podcast, she's going to share with you some approaches that you can take, as well as maybe some things that you might want to avoid or things to lean into. And I really hope that you listen to the end. We let it go a little bit longer, but that's because there's not even a podcast length that could capture how long these conversations need to be, how many conversations we need to have to truly move these conversations forward. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Dr. Caprice Hollins and how to have difficult conversations on race. Hello, everyone. On today's episode of The Leadership Habit, as you heard, I get to sit down and have a really important conversation. Dr. Caprice Hollins is here with us today to help us understand how we can have difficult conversations about race. Race exists in our workplace. This is an obvious conversation that all of us need to have for a variety of reasons. We might feel like it's a prepared or a prepared reason. Maybe it's an unprepared situation that you want to address, something that happened in the workplace. But either way, as leaders, it is our job to be able to have these difficult conversations. And Dr. Caprice Hollins, I am so excited to have this because this is a challenging topic for a variety of people. And I am excited to learn from you, to go there with you, to probably get uncomfortable with you. So thank you so much for being on the Leadership Habit today. I am so glad to have you as a guest.
Thank you, Jen. I'm glad to be here.
I know our audience heard a little bit more about you with that bumper, but from your own words, could you just introduce yourself a little bit to our audience?
Yeah, absolutely. I am a licensed clinical psychologist. That's what my doctorate is in. And I minored in what is now referred to as DEIB. It was multicultural and community psychology. I taught graduate school on issues around multicultural perspectives, focusing specifically on race. Just released a book, Inside Out, The Equity Leader's Guide to Undoing Racism, which I'm really proud of, did a TEDx talk. Then my company, Cultures Connecting, what we do is we help organizations have what you said, these very uncomfortable, difficult conversations about race and provide them with strategies and tools and ways of thinking so that people can work together collectively in their organizations to not only dismantle racism, but sexism, ableism, homophobia, Islamophobia, all of these isms, this othering that we do as we continue to marginalize people because of an identity that they hold.
And the work is so incredibly important, but I didn't know, right? Like, even you've been in your profession, I think I had heard, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you've been teaching for over 20 years. And so you were talking about DEIB before it became DEIB as many of us know it. Caprice, what inspired you to pursue that work back then?
Yeah, thank you for asking that, Jen. So I'm biracial. My mom's white. My older brothers and sisters are white from their from her first marriage, blonde hair, blue eyes. My mother divorced and got pregnant with me a number of years later. And, you know, this is a time in our country when interracial marriages, let alone relationships, were illegal in some states. And so I grew up in this very diverse family. My brother is gay, always knew he was gay, Miss Gay Seattle one year, love bragging about that. My dad married, what'd you say?
I love that.
My dad married a woman from Thailand. Like, I always say, you know, I can go on and on about the diversity and so in my family. And so when I went to grad school, everything was, all of our courses were looking at the topic through an equity lens. And this was long before we were using language like equity or talking about things like privilege or bias. And I was blown away, Jen. I was on an emotional roller coaster around, as I'm looking at how I had been socialized, things that I had said and done that colluded with racism, essentially. And it became a very liberating experience for me to acknowledge, yeah, I do stereotype. And yes, I do have identities where I hold privilege. And I wanted other people to be able to have that same experience of deconstructing how they've been socialized so that they could reconstruct a new way of being in the world. It's very freeing to, instead of, you know, in their entering into relationships, working really hard to say, I don't notice, or not wanting you to reveal a stereotype, to be prepared that someone might say to you, hey, I think you were biased in that moment, and say, tell me more about it, because you know it's a possibility. Or to have someone check your privilege and be like, wow, yep, there it is. You know, it shows up in all different kinds of ways in my life. And it feels so much better to not run from it, but to lean in it, look at where it's coming from, and then see, hey, what can I do differently? How can I show up differently?
My gosh, I have so many questions based off of what you just shared. I mean, because obviously you've been in this space of moving these conversations forward for the bulk of your career and for your entire life in terms of how you've experienced or observed. And I'm curious, what or how, if at all, have you noticed the conversations about race evolving or changing? Have you noticed it? Are they still the same? Are there different topics? You talked about how equity wasn't really kind of that focal point. What are some other differentiations you've noticed, if anything?
I always say that my generation, I grew up in the in the 70s and the 80s. And I always say my generation fell asleep. We coasted on the tail of the civil rights movement, and then we did nothing to continue to move race forward. And so, you know, have things change? I think we're in a new place of just kind of wrestling with trying to get this country to even acknowledge and talk about whether or not racism exists, particularly without having white people become defensive and make it about them. And so I really think that the work right now is in the conversation. There's a great, great quote that says the process is the first part of the product. And while I'd like to be able to say, oh, yes, we've definitely progressed, I think we're just in a different place. I don't know that I would say that we've improved all that much. I feel like the conversation is still relatively new. I'll give an example. I was doing a workshop last week, and a woman, white woman, was talking about her children. And she said, my children don't notice race. And I thought I kind of had this little kind of disappointment because I thought, wow, I thought we were past the colorblind that particularly here in the Northwest. I mean, it's going to be different in different regions and different parts of the world. But I did think that here in the Northwest, that white people were at this place of understanding how colorblind thinking is actually harmful, even though it comes from a good place. So we still got a lot of work to do, helping people, just white people particularly, just lean into how they were socialized, their thinking, their bias, their privilege.
And maybe just that example is an opportunity to share that with our listeners of why colorblindness isn't you talked about the intentions may be good there in terms of how people think they're using it, but why that's actually not really an effective part of the process and the conversation on race. Can you help us understand, or to our listeners, of why maybe saying that not actually moving the conversation forward?
Yeah, let me go a step deeper before I address why it's not okay. I think many white people want to be different than their family members were, that those that use colorblind ideology are saying, I'm not like that white person. I'm a good person. I don't notice race, right? And while that intent, as you said, comes from a good place, the impact is, then you're not seeing all of who I am, right? It would be like saying, you don't notice that I'm a woman, or, you don't notice that I am Muslim, or these parts of my identity that I'm actually proud of, that make me a part of who I am, that shape the way that I think, right? And, the other thing is that it doesn't allow for white people to be curious about how my experiences might be different from yours. I'm not Muslim, but, I know as a Christian that Muslims have a different experience in this country, right? I'm not queer, but I do know that the LGBTQ plus community has a different experience than I do. So if I said, oh, we're all the same, there's no difference, then how do I address equity? How do I advocate to make sure that you're treated in a fair way, just like I'm treated because of my privileged identity? So there's lots of things to it, but I'd say the main things are is that you miss a part of an important part of who I am, and then how do you advocate for change if we're all the same?
I am going to give a plug for listening to your TED Talk, as I have listened to, because you do talk about this. And I think, and I know we're deviating from what we plan to talk about, but if you just saw that example recently in a workshop, I think it's worth, bringing up if we have a platform to do it. So thank you for, I guess, going a little bit off where we initially planned to go. Caruso, I want to get to the why, because people, I think, from what I see, still think, oh, I already know better. I saw everything. I get it. Black Lives Matter, DEIB. Yep, I get it. I think I see some of that where people feel like they still, they understand it. Even though, if I go back to even your words, this is a continuous growth process of curiosity and consideration. There's not a finite end point of it. Why is it so important for us to continue to have these conversations, to pursue this level of understanding? And I guess just being curious.
Yeah, that awareness of ourselves and how we've been racialized or socialized, and that knowledge of other people's experiences who are different from ours, learning about those things and continually growing in those areas will help us to get better at having hard conversations. And then when we can get to the hard conversations, then collectively we can look at, we can ask different questions about things that we see happening in our organization. We can, work together to think about what can we do to create change. The conversation will help us get to the action, to the undoing or the addressing the institutional isms in our organization. And we can't look at our hiring practices and how bias is embedded in those practices, then how will we ever work collectively together to change how we, you know, our hiring process, right? So the conversation can inevitably lead to people working together to create that change.
So if you're a leader and you're hearing this, hiring, how we collaborate and work together, how we even move change forward, how we adjust processes, how we create equity, there are so many reasons of why this conversation is still important to have. Even if you feel like you took that one class, this is an ongoing conversation. But let's get to, I guess, probably the barrier of it. We're talking about how to have these difficult conversations at work about race. Why is it hard? Why do you think, like, from what you see, why is it hard for people to do it?
Yeah. So I think for people of color, it's hard to engage white people because in the process, white people will often become defensive. I'm not like that. I'm different from other white people. They will take that kind of calling in, that kind of like trying to share with a white person, you said or did something that was harmful, they'll take that and they'll personalize it as if it means they're a bad person rather than receive it as a gift. Here's an opportunity for me to think more deeply about how I've been socialized. So people of color often don't want to take the risk because then if you're my boss or you're my coworker, it might affect the relationship. If you're my coworker, it might affect how you treat me. If you're my boss, I might experience micro invalidations in the process. You're being too sensitive. That's not what I meant. Maybe they didn't mean it that way. So for self-preservation, I go to work, just kind of do what I need to do. I have all of these experiences. I go home and I talk about the experiences that I had rather than that burden of being reharmed by trying to push, you know, and create change. For white people, I think the conversation is hard because, again, I think they see it as a good and bad narrative versus you've been socialized. I think for, I do believe there are some people that no matter what you say, no matter what you do, no matter what research you present to them, there is nothing that is going to make them curious, even just a little bit, about how someone's experiences might be different from their own, that they are too heavily invested, really, in continuing to see things the way that they see them. Ultimately, I think to myself, what do white people have to give up in order to entertain the reality for people of color is very different than the reality for them. And what they have to give up, their way of thinking, what they've spent a lifetime believing, the way they engage, the work that they have to now do that's different from what they're comfortable with doing. Yeah. For many white people is too risky and they don't want to give up that comfort, right? It's a lot of work. It's hard work to look at how you're socialized and then have to change how you behave, how you lead, how you think. And so that investment, getting people to do that is probably one of the bigger challenges.
Yes. I mean, because we're upending maybe someone's purse, like just their lived experience in that way. I can see why that's the heavier lift. What is, even though I don't agree with it, but like, I can see why that would be challenging. What do you think as a leader, like if you observe someone like that, that you're working with, that you can tell, like, and I guess I could make a generalization based on some people that I've grown up with and like knowing that the town that I grew up in had, there was a lot of groupthink. There was a lot of, I would call it like socialized, like racism and discrimination built in. And so I can see how it becomes such a lived reality of like, this is my life. This is the way things are. What is the way in with those, with people that might really struggle with that? Is there like, what is like a first step in even having that? Cause I know it's big, like you're talking about unpacking years and generations of like thinking, but what is the way in? Because to me, where I found it's not effective is to say, yo, we don't talk like that. Cause I feel like it's met with more defensiveness, or I would might get on that side, like, oh, Jen, you're just a blank, 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 like stay in your lane, you know? And so what is a softer way in knowing that you're trying to unpack? And is this even a fair question?
No, it's a fair question. It's a fair question. Some people might have a reaction to softer, but you know, I don't. The way I think about it is, how do you meet people where they're at? Right. Yeah. And, you know, I never mean all white people, just like I never mean all Black people or all people of color. We're all in different places in our racial and ethnic identity development. And I think one of the harder things about being a facilitator is that it does require that I meet people where they're at. It is easier to lash out when I'm triggered. It's easier to avoid the conversation altogether just to, for self-preservation. But I think that leaders, I think people who are leaders of organizations, people who are facilitators of these conversations, allies, that one of the things that we can do is to ask questions with genuine curiosity. So when the woman said, my children don't notice race, you know, I asked her, what does she, you know, tell me more, what do you mean by that? Right. So when you put the when you start with a question, then it causes that person to have to do a little bit of work. Now, I'm not talking about the person that you could hand them a $1 million lottery ticket just to be a little curious and they'd say, yeah, no, I don't want that lottery ticket. I'd rather be committed to my misunderstanding or whatever it is. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about most people that I come across that just have been socialized and haven't begun doing the work around diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging is to go to a question. And then as that person is responding, you can ask more questions or you can stop there and then kind of fill in the blanks and do some educating. But when you ask questions, like of this woman, what she wanted to convey was, my children aren't going to treat people badly because of their race. And so then now we can have a talk about that and that how that's, you know, what have you done to help shape your children in a way that they don't, you know, treat children, they don't treat people badly because of their race? Like it can take us to these places versus of opening up the dialogue versus what my body wants to do often is to have a reaction, right? So that's harder and being curious while you're doing it.
Yes. I mean, you and I talked about that on the pre-call and how I missed the opportunity to handle a situation better teaching a bias class. You know, when that individual initially unmuted themselves and said, I don't want to take this class because it's just going to tell me I'm racist. And my response was very more generalized. There was no questioning. It was, well, everyone has bias. Like, and I appreciate learning. I could have done that way better. But also having another like way to approach it. Because the other piece I want to dive into too, before we get into some of the strategies, because you work with organizations on this, you work with individuals, you've got a lot. And when I'm saying Caprice could share a lot with you, she could share a lot. And we are very constrained with our time. But coming back to the why is it hard and the fear of making mistakes and the fear of getting it wrong, I'm not sure if our audience can even tell, like by the sensitive nature of this podcast, I feel like I'm a pretty unreserved person, but I am more tentative in how I am talking because I want to make sure I am being respectful and curious. And so I want to share that because I think part of me is like, I still have the fear of getting it wrong. And I know that there's still work to do. And I'm not even aware of some of the ways that I might get it wrong. But could we talk a little bit more about the fear of making mistakes and the fear of getting it wrong?
Yeah. Well, let's go back to, first of all, thank you for that vulnerability, Jen, right? Like that's the work, right? And so, yeah, I notice what I'm feeling in my body right now. I'm walking on eggshells or whatever it is. Being very thoughtful or careful about my words for fear that I'm going to make a mistake. And even as I teach people, for example, ask questions with genuine curiosity, I always do it. I get it wrong a lot of times. I just have this as a strategy so that I can either circle back around, try it again, or think, okay, the next time I have that opportunity, what are some of the questions that I could have asked? But I do think that naming your fears is an important part of this work, because oftentimes, if we don't identify it, if we don't surface it, our fears will keep us from engaging, and then no learning happens, right? We're actually controlled by our fears. And so I'm afraid too. I'm afraid of losing credibility. I'm afraid of, you know, making mistakes, getting it wrong, all of the things you said. I tend to sweat, right? I would say, going to be I work hard for my money kind of moment, because somebody has said something and I'm having a reaction, and now I need to facilitate it or lean into it. It's like it's not an easy thing to do. And this is why we tell people that your hope for what you want to have happen, the changes you want to see in yourself, your community, your families, have to be greater than what your fears are. Otherwise, you won't do it, right? You won't lean in. And so, you know, that's very real. And this, it also ties into, like, you know, what will you be willing to give up, right? Are you willing to give up that comfort? Are you willing to give up as a leader? Like, I know how to do this thing, so I'm going to continue to do that, versus I don't know how to do this other thing, let's say equity, inclusion, belonging. And so will I, as a leader, see that that's what it means to be a culturally responsive leader, to not have the answers and engage leading without knowing or having the answers. And I feel like I lost your question in there somewhere.
No, I think you did a great job of like leaning into that discomfort, knowing that it is natural to have that place. And it's still, there's still a green light there. Like, go ahead, because you have to have your why, your reason for doing something bigger than your butt, that fear or what you're listening to. I mean, that's that piece of like coming back to the purpose of creating better social change, creating better organizations, a better lived experience for us. And, but also that curiosity of like really knowing that it is different. Like, we cannot pretend that it is the same. But I have to ask the natural follow-up, because I can tell you that I've had not the same conversation, but a different before. I definitely got feedback that was like, I didn't do it that great. So that makes me a little bit more nervous on this. So what happens when you get it wrong? Like, let's lay it out there, because I feel like I'm not sure what, and I talked with our guest afterwards, but like, clearly I still did get it wrong through someone's eyes. And like, that killed me. But what happens? Because we are going to get it wrong. Do we recover when we fail miserably at that?
Yeah, I love it, Jen. I always tell people, you know, it's not if I'm going to offend, it's when. You know, give me enough time with you, I promise you I can offend you too. And not because I woke up that morning thinking, who can I offend today? It's because I have made it as a part of my way of being to constantly push myself to learn and grow. And some people will give you grace when you offend, and other people, they've had so much pain and marginalization and trauma and other things that they will react rather than respond, meaning they won't ask a question with genuine curiosity. But even then, I think it's important to wonder what happened to someone rather than what's wrong with you that you're not giving me grace. And so for me, I have these foundational beliefs that I operate under, like that I'm going to offend. And then somebody calls me in on that thing is just to be curious about it and wonder, what is there an opportunity? What am I missing here? Can I learn from this? If they give me grace in it, great. I love that when people do, but I don't look to them to like kind of give me permission to make mistakes. I look to myself to say, okay, so where do I go from here? So it's kind of the way that I think about it is this visual of when I put that offense, they're calling me in my heart, right? Then it's personal. Like, I'm a good person, and you know, I didn't mean it that way, and at least I tried. But if I put it out in my hand, then this is where the curiosity comes in. I wonder why they're telling me this. What more can I learn about this? I wonder why they're having that reaction to it. You know, I wonder what I could do differently the next time. And so it becomes less personal and more, I call it a hurt so good gift. It hurts to know that I've harmed you. I always say my learning comes, unfortunately, my learning comes at somebody else's expense. But it is good that you told me. Because if you didn't tell me, then I would continue to do that thing, right? Now you've offered me something that I can hold out here in my hand and learn more about so that I can practice incorporating that into my new way of being. Now, let me just say, Jen, I don't incorporate everything that someone gives back to me as feedback into my new way of being. I do some work, I find out more about it, and then I make a decision based on what I've learned. Because truly, it can depend on the person, right? There are some things that we've learned, they're not okay to say that language is antiquated or it's harmful, like colorblindness. So it doesn't matter to me if a person of color says they're colorblind, I know that that's not okay, right? And there are some things that people will tell me that I do a little research, a little wondering, and I realize, oh, I've got to change my language or I've got to change my approach because that feedback, is feedback that has validity.
I so appreciate the way that you reframe the fear of getting it wrong to, because you've shared this multiple times through the podcast, like these are all gifts. And I even like the like hurt so good gift. Like it might make you feel uncomfortable. You might feel like, oh my God, I really missed the mark here. But there is a gift of your own growth, of doing it differently the next time, of being more aware. And I appreciate the gift piece because I think that can give that piece of push it down and like do your best. And know that if you miss the mark, there's a gift there of your growth and how you can do it better the next time. I really appreciate how you describe it as a gift.
Yeah, Jen, another quick way to think about it, you've been walking around all day with food in your teeth and then somebody tells you and you're embarrassed, right? Like, oh my gosh, I have food in my teeth, but you're so glad they told you because you could have walked around the rest of the day with that food in your teeth, right? And it's like, yeah, you're telling me, you're giving me feedback about something that I can use that's going to help me as I move around in the world for the rest of my life, not just the rest of that day.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And please tell people when they have that. I always have lipstick on my teeth and I can't tell you how ridiculous I look. But let's dive into, I'm going to let this go a little bit longer, Caprice, because I feel like you have so many insights. And this is just, again, a very important conversation that we all have to know how to have better to lean into. What are some strategies? You've given quite a few already in terms of how we can reframe that, little things that we can do, but what are some strategies in terms of, I know we had shared this on the pre-call, like, so what if someone on your team says something that's offensive, or you're in a social setting and someone says something inappropriate? So Caprice and I talked about a few different scenarios that you might come into and how do you handle them when they happen? And so this is one scenario. I know that I've seen it. I've seen it even professionally, like in organizations, someone making a really grossly inappropriate, observation, like not okay at all. I've obviously seen it socially. What do you do in those moments? How can you like address that and lean into these difficult conversations?
Yeah. If the person is, if they know what they're saying is not okay, and they're saying it anyway, right? They're not open to learning, then leaders need to set boundaries and follow whatever protocol or procedures that they would normally follow when, kind of reprimanding someone. I think the harder is that oftentimes when people say or do something offensive, they're not aware of it, right? And yet it still has this impact on on their colleagues. And so you're running a meeting. Somebody says, they commit a microaggression, do some work, look that up. They commit a microaggression, they say something offensive, and you as a leader is looking around, you know it's not okay. You're thinking, oh my gosh, who's going to handle this? That person should be you, right? Like you're the leader, you're running the meeting. And so a lot of leaders were taught to handle it privately. And I always say, who's that really for, right? When you take that person one-on-one aside, it's really for the leader, because that's easier. It's less vulnerability, less risk-taking. And it's also for the person who said the offensive thing. So you're really protecting yourself and that other person while the rest of the group or people in your amongst your staff, some of them are impacted by it. And so we recommend that probably 9 times out of 10, if it happens in public, you're going to need to address it in public. And so what do you do then? Right? You interrupt at some point and you say, hey, let's stop and talk about that. Right. And then you, ask them, hey, would you be curious to having some conversation? You connect with them in some way. Hey, that's a common way of thinking, or I used to think that way. So you really want to not hold this enemy image of them. Like, hey, right? You recognize that people have been socialized to think in that kind of way. And then you, we actually have some steps that we teach people. So I'm trying to think what the steps are. But then you, after you do that, you can ask the other, people on your team, hey, has anybody else ever made an offensive comment? Right? Has anybody else ever committed a microaggression? And again, that's all to minimize. This isn't a bad person, that good people can say bad things. And mm-hmm. Here's an opportunity for us to practice having courageous conversations. And by the way, my heart is palpitating when this happens. I am sweating. I am like, oh my goodness. Right. And then you engage, right? You ask questions with curiosity. Like I shared the example earlier, how did you come to understand it that way? I'm wondering, are you familiar with microaggressions or, I imagine that this wasn't what you intended, but let's talk about what the impact might be on other people. Now, I talked about awareness of self and knowledge of others. The more time you spend reading books, watching documentaries, listening to podcasts, developing your understanding of how racism operates, right? The more you're going to be able to educate that person and help them understand. So, there's lots of strategies around it, but I am suggesting that we recognize that we've all offended and that a lot of times what people do is they call people out, which is this kind of like, you're a bad person, that thing's not okay, that's racist, versus calling them in, inviting them into the conversation so that we can practice in our organizations having courageous conversations. And tell your staff, be vulnerable like Jen just was and say, hey, I'm going to try something new and I'm nervous about it, but let's see how it goes, right? And then you can always, I'll just throw in one other thing, something that is helpful to me, is a strategy that's called circling back around. So I might go on break. Everybody goes on break. I'm thinking about that moment I just facilitated, and I'm thinking, gosh, I realized that I never asked other people if they wanted to share the impact on them, or there was something that I didn't do. Maybe I was defensive. Maybe I shamed that person a little bit. You can circle back around and say, hey, I've been reflecting. And if I had a do-over, or this is what I recognized in my behavior that I realize doesn't align with my core values around treating people with respect. It's really about authenticity. It's really about what kind of culture do you want to shape in your workplace? People of color do not feel psychologically safe because their leaders are saying they handled it, but there are the people impacted are left with, did you really? Right. And what did you say? And what about me? Right. And so there's this culture that gets creative that says we don't have hard conversations.
I so much there in terms of I loved, obviously the signals that we're sending to people about how and what we accept and tolerate, but even how we go about it, instead of calling people out, calling them in. And using this as an opportunity to have a broader conversation, because it is important for someone that's being marginalized to know that we're having these conversations. We're not dealing with that in private. And we're not pretending that there wasn't like that couldn't have offended or hurt someone. And on the flip side, also knowing that like good people can say bad things. Good people can say wrong things. I have gotten it wrong. I know that my partner, my husband's gotten it wrong. All I know is that I can continue to have these conversations so I can hopefully keep getting it more right than not. I wanted to ask you, because you talked about, you know, continuing your own journey of learning. And of course, you have a book out, and I know that we're going to have to end. But Caprice, how can they get your book Inside Out to really help them learn how to lean into these conversations? And how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah. And if you Google, so you can Google it, you can get it anywhere. But if you Google Inside Out, you're probably going to get a Disney movie. I don't watch TV a whole lot, so not a good title. But it's the Equity Leader's Guide to Undoing Institutional Racism. There's lots of strategies in there to help guide leaders in really creating a culture where everyone feels a sense of belonging, that no one's identity becomes a reason for them not having opportunity, access, promotion, et cetera. So you can Google it and you'll find it. You can go to culturesconnecting.com, go to our website, join our mailing list. We do workshops open to the public, talking with children about race. We do them just for white women, hiring and retention. There's so many resources out there now, not just mine, right? That there's really no reason for anyone to not learn or know more. And you don't even have to read a book, right? You can watch a 15-minute TEDx talk or a 2-minute video on what are microaggressions. I grew up with encyclopedias, right? Like learning is literally like at our fingertips. I encourage leaders to just spend a little bit of time, instead of watching that movie, watch that documentary, instead of reading that book, you know, read one that's going to help them to grow and learn. And yes, you will be uncomfortable. And yes, there is a risk. It's why it's called a risk. And yes, you can get better at having courageous conversations if you do the work.
Yes. I want to have you back to talk about so many things that we could not address today, because this is not even remotely possible to have this conversation in the short of time that we gave it. But Dr. Caprice Hollins, thank you so much for giving us your time, for giving us just like ways that we can approach it, for giving us this gift to end it on like that, the gift of knowing how we can continue to be curious and to create better workplaces for people. Thank you so much for coming on The Leadership Habit. I greatly appreciate you stopping by.
Yeah, thank you, Jen.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Leadership Habit podcast. I hope that you gained something new, a new mindset, a new way that you can lead to create an organizational team, culture, community of belonging, one where we are seeing and being curious about other people's lived experiences, and we are setting things up so everyone can feel like they can belong. I appreciate you listening to the way through, and I would definitely recommend continuing this conversation through checking out Dr. Holland's book, Inside Out, listening to her podcast. And of course, if we can help you in your journey as a leader, we at Crescom talk about bias, we talk about inclusion, we talk about 24 different topics that are designed to help you be the best leader that you can be. Head on over to crescom.com. There you can request a complimentary leadership skills workshop. You can find out more about what we do and how we can help you. And of course, if you know someone that could benefit from hearing this conversation with Dr. Hollins, please share this episode with them. I would love for her work to be continued and reflected on, to see just how many people we can get to lean into the difficult conversations on race. Until next time.